the council ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may do so. Next matter is Vogel versus Grierson, 62225.
Thank you. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the justices, my name is Adam Levine, along with Daniel Marks. We're representing both Anthony Vogel, who is the president of the Clark County Deputy Marshals Association. This case arises from the relationship between the district court, the justice court, Clark County, and the marshals. And it is brought as a quo warranto petition because there are substantial concerns that a court cannot be a party to a declaratory judgment action. It is the role of the judiciary and the judicial branch to adjudicate controversies and interpret the law, not participate as a litigant or a party to such disputes. The Nevada legislature has provided for the relationship between marshals or bailiffs, as they are known, and the courts. Unlike certain statutes which have been adopted by the legislature, which specifically permit this court to hire employees, those statutes being NRS 1.340 and 2.300, the legislature has elected for a different system to be utilized for the trial courts.
Before you get too far in your argument, is there anything that, from your standpoint, the court should glean from the decision in the Sparks case?
No, and I don't believe City of Sparks is dispositive on that. That was the subject of this order for the court to be prepared to address. The answer is no, and the reason is a couple reasons. First and foremost, City of Sparks involved an issue within one entity, the City of Sparks, where you had the executive branch of that entity intruding into the judicial branch of that same entity. That is not present in this case. What we have is a duly constituted political subdivision of the state of Nevada, Clark County, and the state judiciary, which are two separate entities. And the legislature has provided that in this circumstance, the county is responsible, and this is NRS 3.100, it is the county who is responsible for providing facilities, attendance, light, fuel, stationery, sufficient for the district court to conduct its business. It is our position that the marshals have traditionally been, previously known as bailiffs, have always been attendants, as referred to in the statute, provided by the county for the court to conduct its business, and in prior case law, they have been recognized as attendants. The case, of course, would be Board of County Commissioners of Washoe County versus Devine, wherein the writ of mandamus issue to compel the Board of County Commissioners to recognize the appointment of a bailiff. There would be no need to bring a writ to force the commissioners to recognize the appointment of a bailiff if the bailiff were not a member of the Clark County, or the Washoe County in that case, service. NRS 3.310 and its counterpart for the Justice Court, 4.353, speaks in terms of a court may appoint. Doesn't say employ, it says appoint. Well, the question is, appoint to what? The answer, we assert, is appoint to county service. The Clark County Code recognizes bailiffs and marshals as county employees. The code speaks in terms of a competitive and non-competitive service. Judicially appointed marshals under the code are part of the non-competitive service. The law in the state of Nevada, as set up by the legislature, permits employment by the state of Nevada. This court has its new marshals standing outside the courtroom. They are members of the unclassified service of the state of Nevada under Chapter 284. However, the county marshals over in the district court and the justice court, they're not part of the state of Nevada's unclassified service. They are members of the Clark County service as created by statute in the legislature. And that's required, we assert, by separation of powers. And that is an issue, Justice Douglas, that City of Sparks did not address. Separation of powers was not raised in City of Sparks.
Previously, unless you misspoke, you conceded that they're employees and not public.
I'm sorry?
Previously, you had indicated they're employees and not public officers. Was that intentional or unintentional?
That is unintentional, and the reason is this. If the inquiry is directed to the issue of the remedy of quo warranto, quo warranto speaks in terms of, it's Latin, by what warrant. It is directed to an authority. By what warrant or authority do you assert a privilege or a franchise? And traditionally, quo warranto has been extended to peace officers and firefighters, particularly peace officers, because quo warranto is directed to a position which...
That begs the question, because we're trying to figure out what are they for purposes of doing what we're doing.
Well,
the understanding is that the court is allowed to employ folks for security. You use the term appoint, but appoint
to county service is our position. Appoint to county service. The governing statute 3.310 and its counterpart specifically states that they are to be paid the same as other county officers. And of course, when construing statutory language, this court is not to construe a statute in a manner which renders the language superfluous or meaningless. The legislature refers to them as, doesn't say the same as county officers, it says the same as other county officers, and that is because as peace officers, they are invested with the sovereign power of the state to enforce the law, which is a purely executive branch function.
Tell us exactly what you want. What are you looking for?
We are looking for clarification from this court, twofold, because the petition also addresses EDCR 1.53, which I will address in a minute. Clarification from this court that notwithstanding the inherent authority of the court, and we are not disputing that the court has such inherent authority to give direction to the marshals as necessary, that this court issued the appropriate writ directing all of the respondents to recognize that marshals are county employees, not employees of some undefined amorphous service that is not part of Chapter 284, the unclassified service of the state of Nevada, like your marshals outside the door, and likewise not part of the county service. That is precisely what we are looking for. Clarification. We are, in the classic sense of quo warranto, by what warrant, we are asking this court to determine by what warrant, by what authority does the district court claim that they are employees as opposed to what other courts and other jurisdictions have referred to as either attendants or attachés, related staff. And again, I think that is necessary under separation of powers.
Is there a difference between an administrative marshal or bailiff and one who serves in one of our courtrooms? Now, five of us had bailiffs.
As a practical matter, no, because most of you have served as judges, and you know that they go, when they're not performing in a courtroom, due to the shortages, they go down to the security desk and they perform administrative functions. Likewise, when a judicial marshal is absent, is on vacation, ill, otherwise unavailable, they just take somebody from the administrative pool and put him in the courtroom. But as far as the Clark County Code is concerned, there is a difference because judicially appointed marshals under the Clark County Code are part of the non-competitive service, but the administrative marshals are actually hired through a competitive process. They interview. They're not appointed by a judge to county service. They go apply to Clark County Human Resources, and they go through a background check, interview process, and everything else. So as a practical matter, there's very little distinction. As far as a de jure distinction under the Clark County Code, yes, there is.
What problem are they having now that you have to file this suit?
The problem is that because of the lack of clarity, a great deal of confusion has arisen. The Clark County Board of Commissioners has recognized the CCDMA as an employee organization for purposes of 288. However, the courts have said, well, we're going to enter into an agreement with the association governing the terms and conditions of employment. And then Clark County turns around in the case of Ron Fox, which I made a record of in this case, and said, we don't care about your MOU. We're not bound by it. And that creates a great deal of confusion. Nobody knows who the employer is, and it is by that reason that quo warranto is invoked to ask by what warrant. By what warrant does the court assert the right to engage in the executive branch function of law enforcement. And I have supplemented the record in this case with the Marshal's Manual, which is distributed by the court, which invokes the statutes relating to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department as authority to create a law enforcement agency answerable to the judges. That is not consistent with separation of powers, as the Pennsylvania Supreme Court recognized in In Re Act 147 of 1990. It is a gross violation of separation of powers for the judiciary to employ peace officers. The federal system likewise recognizes the marshals in the federal service, despite the fact that they service the courts, that they're in the courts, and even if they have to take direction from the judges in the federal system, the United States District Court, the Circuit Courts of Appeal, they do and remain, in fact, at all times to be executive branch employees.
Is more confusion caused because these men and women that serve the courts are not state employees? They're not state employees. The judges were state employees.
Correct.
And does that cause more confusion, and is there anything this court can do about that?
It doesn't create confusion in and of itself if this court recognizes that NRS 3.100 was originally entitled an act relating to sheriffs. The statutory scheme enacted by the legislature is that the sheriff traditionally was present through himself or through a deputy, I think that's NRS 248.100, in the district court. In larger counties such as Clark County, the sheriff has been relieved of that. I think of my rebuttal time I would like to save. But no, traditionally, the sheriff has always been an executive branch function. And despite the rebuttal time, I do want to make a quick record on EDCR 1.53. That is the local rule that purports to give the judiciary authority to bar membership in employee organizations. I must apologize to this court when I briefed this issue under the First Amendment, and I believe it is a First Amendment violation. I missed a statute which would govern that, and that is NRS 614.090 through 614.110. 614.090 gives all employees in the state the right to engage and band together for their mutual aid or protection, and it makes the denial of that right a misdemeanor under 614.110. EDCR 1.53 is not only unconstitutional, if it were to be exercised to deny an employee the right to join an organization, the court would be engaging in a misdemeanor, and we can't have that.
Mr. Levine, you don't dispute, however, that the deputy marshal signed a document that informs them of their status as employees and tells them, explains to them that they are not or cannot be a part of the SEIU bargaining unit. You don't deny that, do you?
I don't deny that they're told they can't be part of the bargaining unit for purposes of collective bargaining. Local 1107 cannot bargain on their behalf, but they do have a right to join the organization if they so choose under the First Amendment. There's a difference between having a bargaining agent and a right to join an organization to band together for mutual aid and protection, and that is an absolute right under 614.090, and the language of that statute mirrors, of course,
When an offer of employment is made to a deputy marshal, the document that they sign is also, I guess, invalid in your mind.
It is. They have the right to join 1107. 1107 does not have the statutory right to collectively bargain on their behalf, and that is what the CCDMA exists for, because it is an organization solely of law enforcement. Thank you. And I appreciate your attempts to save my rebuttal time.
Your Honor, Clark County is yielding its oral argument to respondents, a judicial district, and Las Vegas Justice Court.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chief Justice, I'll endeavor to conclude my presentation with 7.5 minutes left. The Justice Court Counsel and I have agreed to split our time.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
I'm going to try to conclude my presentation with 7.5 minutes left. Counsel for Justice Court and I have agreed to split our time equally.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Jason Woodbury. I represent the 8th Judicial District Court and its administrator, Stephen Grierson. This Court has directed counsel to address 4 issues in this argument. With the Court's indulgence, I would actually like to start with the 4th issue, which is the issue raised by Justice Douglas initially. This case has already been decided. The heart of this court's decision in Sparks versus Sparks Municipal Court confirms that Nevada's judiciary must have direct control over its employees in order to function as an independent branch of government. The only question that could plausibly exist in this case post-Sparks is this. Does the security staff at issue perform tasks which are an integral component of the judicial function? There can only be one answer to that question. Of course they do. Sparks, the decision itself, references court security personnel as essential court employees in the opinion itself. But even if Sparks didn't specifically reference them, it is clear that security, and by extension, the person or persons who provide court security, are essential components of Nevada's judicial function. Nevada's Constitution promises to its people a process by which they may peaceably resolve disputes, but the existence of that process does not itself guarantee that the dispute process will be peaceable. An American courthouse is a volatile place.
Let me ask you something. Do you see any difference between the fact that Sparks were all employees, the judges work for Sparks, all the employees work for Sparks? Where here we have state employees who have bailiffs and marshals that are some other type of employees, whether they be county employees, executive employees, whatever.
No.
There's no difference here.
I don't see any substantive difference. The point, the extension of Sparks, is that the Nevada judiciary, which consists in part of my clients, the district court, has a judicial function. And there are inherent powers in performing that judicial function. And what Sparks says is you have to have employees to perform your judicial function. That's just reality. You have to have a clerk. You used to have a reporter. You have to have security personnel to maintain order. That's part of the judicial function. Now, there may be some agreement. There, in fact, with my clients, is an agreement with the county, a cooperative agreement, because that's what counties do to some extent. They employ people. They're good at human resources, cutting paychecks, things of that nature. But that must exist with the acquiescence of the court. It can't be mandated to the court. So the legislature, if it decided we're going to make these folks state employees, we think we've got a better system, fine. But it must be with the acquiescence of the judicial system. Otherwise, we lose that checks and balance system that is the core of the separation of powers, because then it's all checks. It's all checks and no balances.
But only works for counties over 700,000. Doesn't work in Reno, which is over 400,000 people.
I suggest to you, Justice Cherry, that it works in Reno, and nobody's saying that if a system doesn't work, that it can't continue to be in place, but it must work with the acquiescence of the court. It can't be legislatively mandated that a court does not have the authority to control its employees, and in particular its security personnel.
Can you get rid of all the administrative bailiffs and simply hire a rent-a-cops or some type of security system to do all the administrative bailiffs functions and still allow 52 bailiffs to serve the various courts, family and civil criminal?
No, I don't think they could do that at all, Your Honor. I think the court's obligation, the judicial function, doesn't stop at the courtroom doors. That's where it's probably most acute, but it doesn't stop there. The security that has to be guaranteed is throughout that courthouse.
Well, they're hiring. Could they hire a group like the fellows that sit at the loading dock when we go to the Regional Justice Center?
The court, can the court hire them?
No, not the court, the county.
The county could do it with the court's acquiescence, but that's the critical thing here, is that only with the court's acquiescence can it do that. There is no dispute under Sparks that there is a category of inherent powers. Personnel management is at the core of the judiciary's inherent powers. And when you're talking about personnel management of people performing integral court functions, the court controls that.
Now, we had this problem here with, we didn't have our own police force. We decided we need our own police force. Now we have our own police force.
You absolutely did. And you went through the legislative process that is, intentionally or unintentionally, I think this court has provided a model of how to invoke your inherent powers. It should be invoked as a last resort. You should voluntarily comply with the legislative process. In the furlough issue that happened a few years back, this court created a record and said, we can't do our function unless we do something different with this furlough issue.
But everybody was involved, whether it be legislative police or the executive police, are the people that sat out here before we had our own police, were all state employees. There wasn't state employees and some other people working, county employees or whatever. That's what bothers me, is the fact that the person who works in Judge Tagliati's courtroom, that marshal, is a county employee or some type of employee, not a state employee.
Well, I agree that they are either county employees or they are court employees. I don't think there's any room after Sparks for them to be county employees. Those statutes that Mr. Levine was discussing, 3.100, if you read them in the way that he has suggested you should read them, they're incompatible. The court has to have the authority to manage, in particular, its security personnel.
Aren't you overreading City of Sparks a bit? There was, before they got into invoking the inherent powers, there was a showing made that there was an irretrievable breakdown between Sparks city government and the municipal court on the horizon. And that seems to me to be what's in our cases, that the courts, it's not just a matter of their acquiescence, because that would give them the ultimate final say on everything. So, for example, if they wanted 5 bailiffs for every judge or 10 bailiffs for every judge, that would be sort of irrational. And could they demand the county to do that and then invoke separation of powers and say, we know our own business better than you? As a matter of separation of powers, this is our prerogative, now pay up. That's not quite how it works, though, right?
I certainly agree with that. There is a check system in place in Sparks. I think the obvious place for that check is the budget. And if the court were to do something absurd along the lines of what you suggested, the county has every right under the separation of powers to say, no, court, we control the budget. What you've asked for is not rational. Reasonable and necessary.
Yeah, we don't have a dispute between the county and the courts. We have a dispute between the employees and the court.
That's precisely correct, Your Honor, and that is part of the procedural defect in the manner in which this case has been presented. We've addressed those certainly in our briefs. I do see that I'm cutting into my colleague's time. So
before you sit down, though, I take you back, because counsel's asserted that clearly they were standing on their behalf to come before us. What is your position as to that issue?
There certainly is not. As far as pro warranto, they are employees. They are not public officers, and this court has never allowed an employee to bring a quo warranto action. As far as the writ of prohibition, there's no underlying judicial proceeding. Writ of prohibition talks about jurisdiction. Jurisdiction requires a case in order for it to be exercised, and they have the adequate remedy at law through a declaratory judgment.
If the Chief Justice would permit, I'd like to pose a question that seems to me to be more particular to you than it is to your colleague whose time we're invading. And that has to do with the constitutionality of EDCR 1.53. That rule, it is argued by petitioners, is an unconstitutional infringement on the bargaining rights of the hired marshals. If this court were to conclude that the district court properly employs those marshals, then the second question, whether presented by quo warranto or by prohibition, is the constitutionality of 1.53, which appears to limit or prohibit the marshals' collective bargaining rights. I'd like to hear from you on that point, if it seems to be particularized to the 8th Judicial District respondents in this case.
I agree with that, Justice Hardesty. I would rely mainly on my brief in order to keep my response short because all the points that we would make.
I'll add 2 minutes to his time, so you may answer Justice Hardesty's response and also add it to Mr. Levine's time as well on rebuttal.
Very well. 1.53, I don't think is properly before this court. There has been no injury. They are parties to a memorandum of understanding where the court has recognized the unit of the Clark County Deputy Marshals Association. So I think that's the first challenge here is, are we really properly before the court? This court's not here to address confusion and to remedy confusion. This court is here to remedy injuries. Now, there may be a way to get to this court, but it should be through the Declaratory Judgments Act with a full record. But I think Mr. Levine misstates what the local rule 1.53 does. It doesn't prevent employees from associating with one another. Absolutely, the employees can associate with one another. It does impose a limitation on whether or not the court will recognize a particular group of employees as a bargaining unit. Courts are not, at this point in time, under the obligations of Chapter 288. Now, whether or not that could be done in the future is not before this court, but they don't have to recognize statutorily any particular employee unit. So it prohibits any discrimination as to whether an employee is in a unit or not in a unit. And I would suggest that it is compliant with the First Amendment because it is narrowly tailored. Courts need to control their employees. Part of controlling their employees is determining whether a bargaining unit is appropriate for recognition by the court or not, given the court's.
You would agree that the City of Sparks concluded that it was inappropriate for the city to enter into collective bargaining agreements for court employees, but nothing in that opinion prohibits the court from engaging in collective bargaining units, right?
I agree with that.
All right.
You have 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Thomas Dillard on behalf of the respondent, Ladina Gamble in Las Vegas Justice Court. Our issues for the Justice Court are aligned with the District Court, other than the exception of what Justice Hardesty mentioned, so I don't need to take a lot of time with what underscoring what you've already been hearing from counsel. The challenge here, I would go back to the standing issue of coming to this court with an original jurisdiction on this quo warranto proceeding. It seems to, by taking the argument that because he's challenging status, open up this court to exclusive jurisdiction of basically a catch-all grievance forum for public employees. I think the statute was ever, or the matter was ever designed to do that. In this case, it's particularly problematic to do it because there's been no discovery, and yet we have a record that's been supplied that I really can't speak to about the policies and procedures that apparently have been promulgated by the marshals and as to what they're doing. There's no record of any of that. I don't know how that document came into being. So it seems to me the end around how we get here in exclusive jurisdiction, the standing issue is certainly problematic, and there needs to be at least a record created if we want to get into the issue of whether or not in the separation of powers these bailiffs are doing law enforcement function outside the judicial arena into the executive. Going back to the issue on the merits, can't get around that the challenge here wants to effectually, through the back door, find unconstitutional NRS 4.353. The hallmark of employment has always been, from this court and many others, control. And there's no getting around that statute places exclusive control of the judicial marshal to the judge. It says it's appointed at the pleasure of the judge. And I think a point is pertinent, not for the reason made by worthy counsel Mr. Levine, but it designates that different than having a position, have any expectation of a property interest. A point is at the pleasure of the judge, exclusively, that the marshal is to serve at the pleasure of the judge and to preserve order of the court, open and close the court, and do other duties as may be required of the deputy marshal by the justice of the peace of the court. There's no getting around that the control is vested with the judge when it comes to the deputy marshal. And then applying that to Sparks, I agree with counsel, it's dispositive. This court was careful to make clear in Sparks that any intrusion on that control was unconstitutional. And I think the Sparks rationale applies even with greater force in this case than it did in specific Sparks employees.
Is there a difference between your position and the district judge's position, since all of the people that work in the Justice Court, including the JPs, I don't want to say county employees, are get county paychecks? Is there a difference? Because the district judges get paid by the state. Is there a difference there in your position as opposed to the district judge's position?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't think that's an issue that or a factor that plays in here. There's no problem, the fact that these employees are county funded. It doesn't take away the fact that they are employees of the court. Funding is not the hallmark of employment. It is control.
So if they were in an abusive employment relationship that ended in a conventional wrongful termination or sex or race discrimination claim, the county would be the appropriate defendant?
Well, I think that goes back to immunity. Immunity attaches to function, not title. And if we're talking about some abusive relationship with the court, then the question is, what function is the court employing? And if it's outside of judicial function, then there is no immunity for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I would like to start with 1.53 and some of the issues raised by Justice Hardesty. The infringement under 1.53 is not just infringement on bargaining, it's infringement on association rights. The language of the statute, subsection B, says the court may also in its discretion prohibit specific employees from joining such employee organizations. These employees include but are not limited to, and then list. It doesn't actually list the marshals, but include but not limited to would certainly be broad enough to encompass them. And it is the right of association, not necessarily the right of bargaining. Whether the court is obligated to bargain or chooses to bargain, a court rule that says that the court may in its discretion prohibit joining an organization, association, not only violates the First Amendment, it has, notwithstanding the issue of injury, First Amendment jurisprudence recognizes a chilling effect. Why would a marshal donate a portion of his paycheck every month if there is the possibility that the court in its whim or discretion may decide we're not going to allow that anymore and all of your contributions have been for naught? So there is a real chilling effect within the meaning of the First Amendment, notwithstanding the fact that to date the 8th Judicial District Court has not attempted to exercise that other than the documents they make them sign that say you may not join Local 1107. The subject was brought up of supervision of court personnel. I heard the word clerks mentioned. I think all of the justices are aware that the clerks are employees of Clark County. They are, in fact, governed under the collective bargaining agreement with SEIU Local 1107. And I think Justice Cherry hit upon the key issue in this case, which is if they are not county employees, what are they? The state has not provided for them to be covered under Chapter 284.
Mr. Levine, isn't there an interlocal agreement between the 8th Judicial District Court and I believe the Justice Court, Las Vegas Justice Court, and Clark County governing pay and other employment issues relating to the employees that work for the courts?
There is the interlocal agreement. However, that interlocal agreement cannot trump statute. The court and the county cannot, by contract, alter the system put in place by the legislature. The legislature would
How do you arrive at this conclusion, Mr. Levine, in light of Harvey?
I'm sorry?
How do you arrive at that conclusion in light of Harvey? Didn't Harvey make clear that the court employees, that the clerk's staff are report to the judges?
They report to the judges, but they are employed by Clark County. The point is this, that it is not inconsistent to say that the court, as part of its inherent authority to govern its affairs, may give direction, but that doesn't make them necessarily an employee, and that is the distinction that the case law has drawn and that I are asking you to draw between an attendant or an attaché and an employee. The concept, the idea of a court engaging in executive branch functions of employment is highly undesirable, as Justice Pickering has pointed out. What happens when the actions of an employer give rise to liability? It is extremely undesirable to have...
How is that any different than a judicial secretary or a clerk who makes a sexual harassment or discrimination claim against the judges or the court managing the court? There are cases all over America where judges are sued for employment decisions where they have exercised an administrative function as opposed to a decision or judicial function.
That is absolutely correct.
Don't you recognize that difference?
I do recognize that difference, and that is the danger in allowing, I know I'm over my time, but that is the danger in allowing the judiciary to act in such a capacity where the legislature has provided by statute that they are to be provided by the county. The legislature has chosen that that liability is to be borne by the county and the responsibility by the county taxpayers. The courts, with due respect, the judges were elected to adjudicate contested cases, not to be an employer.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Does anyone have any further questions? This matter will stand submitted and will be in recess until 11:30.